If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather around. Get your laptop, get your Bluetooth speaker, hook your phone up to your car, and then listen to another episode of This Life with Bob Forrest and Dr. Drew.
That's...
with our favorite guest, Shelly.
Yes,
oh,
yes, Shelly
Sprague,
back by extreme demand. That's extreme a popular demand.
She should have her own podcast, Susan.
Yeah,
Susan.
Ooh,
come on!
I just saw the light bulb go off over her head. Be careful what you wish for.
Comes prepared with her laptop.
I know a lot of scary stuff on there. But let me get a little business out of the way first. Remind everybody, Facebook.com, Dr. Drew, YouTube/Dr. Drew. Follow us on Twitter, Dr. Drew, and don't forget to subscribe to the shows on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbay, which I'm not very familiar with, and do listen when it hits so we know you're there. We want to give the audience more shows. We want to keep this thing coming. So remember, visit Dr.com and check out the contact list there to give us your emails. We're going to do it for some emails today. And I have a series coming out, an ultimate, what should we call it?
The history of the opiates in the world.
I read the first
you
part.
You did the first
it.
One. We went, Absolutely. You went, so the first part was the prehistory and Neanderthals and stuff. Yeah, right?
I love it.
So we're going all the way to the present.
I can't wait.
Yeah, right now we're working on the Civil War.
What about the opium wars of China?
We get into that.
We're going to go into that.
Don't you worry.
That's some of my favorite stuff.
We don't get deep into it. We just talk about how the British set it up and how it came over here and that kind of stuff. Don't forget a new podcast called Swole Patrol with Mike Cathwood. Also, obviously, Bob and I on This Life. And we've got Weekly Infusion. We've got Adam and Drew. Don't forget that one. Dr. Drew Podcast. Get all that stuff at dr.com/shows. And hashtag you live. It's the other way to find everything. So, Shelly, welcome back. We're so pleased that you're here.
I'm so happy to be here.
You had to come across town.
So, yes.
That was miserable.
Are you as angry with
the mayor as I am for the potholes and the non-functioning roads that we have in Los Angeles? They're unbelievable,
it's
Bob.
It's unbelievable.
Isn't it something?
I live in Claremont, and it's wonderful.
When you hit Orange County, it's like, that means that people can build roads in this country?
You go right out past the 5.
Yes.
And then it's like...
What happened?
Disneyland.
Yes.
Like a whole new world.
Yes. And I'm going 12 miles an hour, mind you, but I'm going around potholes the entire time.
Yeah.
This is Los Angeles.
What about all the tents everywhere?
Well, that's the other thing I'm pissed about.
Ridiculous.
That's the other thing I'm pissed about is it's disgusting that we allow. What did we, have we discussed the homelessness?
Yeah, I just think that, Garcetti decided you're not going to brutalize the homeless. So now we have these homeless encampments all across Southern California. 48,000 people are homeless. We do nothing.
Seems like more.
Yeah, but listen to this, though. This is my catchphrase. We keep calling it a homeless problem.
Yeah, that's not the
issue.
That
just means we don't have enough homes. I think we have enough homes.
Right.
We do.
They want it to be a
mental health and addiction problem.
But they insist on the LA Times ran a huge article
about it. I saw it on Sunday.
And it opened with, well, it's these young professionals who've driven up the price of houses. No, that has nothing to do with it. They all have vouchers for housing.
Yes.
Yeah.
But they're mentally ill. They don't want to do it.
They don't want to live indoors.
Right.
Have you ever You've been on cocaine.
Yeah.
All right, so talk about it. Meth. That's what gave us our
meth. Meth is big in the homeless community.
Absolutely. And the thing I want to say is, first, I miss Loveline.
Oh.
So if we could please get some kind of Loveline. Everybody tells me how much they miss Loveline. Hmm. And I do, too, because it's such a part of my upbringing. Hmm. Loved it. Love, love line.
So we need to get some, like, an hour of radio at night going again or something.
It was so good. It was so good.
What Love Line was, just think of the diversity of people that listened to it.
I know. It was
so good.
Just when it was the only, even when it was just the Sunday night.
I know.
When it was the Sunday night after Rodney, right? It was after Rodney, right?
That's way
back. That was like all LA was listening to that.
Everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
And everyone tells me. Oh, Love Line. Oh, I love that show. I used to listen to that show when I was coming back from the swing shift from working in rehab in Monrovia. And
Monrovia.
I got off at 11 or something.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
and so I would listen to it all the way to West Hollywood, you know, where I lived at the time. And I loved how brilliant you were able to craft some solution-oriented issue
out of these crazy,
intense problems, but you were referring, you were dealing with them, you were facing their problems with them, and they were like, oh, somebody like has an answer to this.
Yeah.
Like, these
guys are in their
bedrooms.
And the other thing we had that you and I have agreed, Bob, that we need now is it was a community.
Yes.
It was a gathering.
And it was
fun. We don't have that anymore.
It was really fun. And then, you know, you always had the juxtaposition of the other guys that you worked with on the show that were like the jokesters and like, you know, kind of keeping things like moving and a little bit light, even though the material got really heavy sometimes.
You know, but everybody really thinks of it only hosted by Adam, right?
Yeah. Oh.
But when I was on Moses, when Swedish Eagle was your partner and he wasn't funny. He wasn't funny.
No, poor man was trying to be funny back then.
Yes.
Yeah, but he was just drunk.
He was just himself.
He was just stoned, a little stoned.
I know you were.
Swedish Eagle.
Bob was wasted.
I was wasted.
How could you even utilize your own mind to remember any of those
Swedish Eagle, I just liked it best with Swedish Eagle. It was only like a year, right?
That's right. I don't remember you being there then.
I was there.
I remember you back later in Burbank.
When it was in past.
I know, but I remember you in Burbank, and you kept running out and shooting up, and I was like, we've got to get rid of this guy.
That was
I was like,
common,
how long are the breaks around here? That's what I said. How long are the breaks?
Back in the day, we got to get rid of this guy. Like, that's the common theme.
Big theme.
Oh, Bob's coming. Hide.
Yeah.
Well, that was everybody's take on Bob.
And you want to know the funniest cocaine take on that? So Frenchie, who's a great friend of ours, who's sober, doesn't mind you knowing that he dealt a little cocaine in his day. Mm-hmm. So I come to Frenchie's front door, and apparently this is what went on inside. And Gibby and Martine were there.
Yeah.
And Frenchie looked out his window and said, oh, shit, it's Bob. And they had like an 8-ball, and they put it up and hid it in the kitchen cupboard. And then just when I came in, they acted like there was no drugs there.
Yeah.
And I knew there was. But you were like a dog with a piece of meat hanging out.
You're like, you start sniffing around the kitchen.
What's going on, you guys? It never worked.
Well, then people started not letting him in. That's what started happening.
Yeah, that was a couple years later. But then it's funny. But this is funny. So Martine finally gives in because I'm just going to sit them out. I know they're getting high. If I stay here long enough, they're going to give in and start doing it. So Martine goes to reach for the Coke, and it was in a baggie, and he ripped the baggie, and the Coke fell down
in the wall.
And then we spent like hours trying to get the Coke out of the wall.
Didn't you guys end up going down the wall?
Opening the wall up? A wall is made of drywall, which looks very much like cocaine when you break it open.
This was a big...
You started sniffing the drywall.
Yeah, well, combo drywall Coke.
No, we were smoking things back then, like a heavily smoking thing. So you had the cat litter, you had the paint chips, and you had the drywall, and then the cocaine.
Well,
we had a lot less cocaine than drywall.
And Shelley was around a lot of this. I don't know if you remember, but a friend of ours, I don't want to...
Because
when you go to crack, when you say crack, people don't like their names mentioned. So anyway, musician who will remain nameless
had
this great idea that since we always end up after like a day and a half looking on the carpet and looking on the ground, why don't we throw some down there so we know there's some there?
Oh, God,
so we took two huge things of crack and crushed it up into little pieces and threw it all around the living room to know that later there's
the
real stuff down
there. That people do
now, listen,
sitting
and then,
around an apartment with a cottage cheese ceiling.
No, I understand that. And And then people go, well, why don't people on meth want to be inside? I mean, yeah. They don't understand that people do crazy shit when they're on drugs.
Yeah. They don't understand, like, how the crazy. Mind works. Yeah,
so there's twofold of the meth epidemic, and I'll just say what I've observed.
Okay.
The homeless population are on meth.
Yes.
A lot of them.
Huge amount.
Well, opiates, too.
Huge
opiates
amount.
Opiates and
it's harder
meth.
To get a hold of. Meth, yeah. They can get for $3.
Yep, you just stand, right? at, the, you stand
so
at the freeway,
cheap.
And you get if you collect $4 standing at the freeway, you have food for the day and meth for the day.
Yeah.
$4.
But you don't
yeah.
need food if you have meth.
I understand, but you can still, you need food once in a while. But the point is, you stand there for half an hour, your
meth
day
is
set.
Meth is big yes. in downtown around the missions. Meth is big and spice and weird drugs. Like that sell for $3, Drew.
And yeah, what I think about it, too, is that the mental illness in combination with the meth and the spice is causing
craziness.
These people to actually
be more
have
debilitated than they actually
like,
yeah. have
it's
been.
It's sailing yeah. their mental illness yeah. symptoms yeah. through the roof
right.
with no way to actually rein them in, get them medicated, get them landed,
that's right.
and get
and
them
no,
housed.
And no will on behalf of the people
no.
who drive by and step over them every day, and our government who thinks they wanted to make it a housing problem.
Yes.
They're out of their minds. This is disgusting.
It is.
People should be ashamed of themselves that they allow this to happen.
So now the other part of the meth problem is, and I don't think it's as big a problem as Shelley does, I think it's keeping the opiate addicts alive on a certain level. Because I talk to polysubstance abuse
on the
nowadays.
On the
remember,
streets?
What was polysubstance abuse at Lost and Seen's?
Cocaine, alcohol. No, cocaine, alcohol, pot.
No, but of the opiate addicts, were, they would use cocaine and alcohol.
Oh, yeah,
right?
yeah.
So nowadays, it's always meth.
No, it's meth.
It's always meth. And the answer is twofold, I think. One is it's cheaper, right?
More accessible.
Last
more
longer.
Easily accessed because it's everywhere.
Easily transported.
Right?
Colombia versus Mexico.
Oh, the meth comes from Colombia? No,
Coke
Mexico.
Comes from Colombia. But also meth is produced here sometimes.
Yeah. But not as much.
Yeah.
Remember we used to treat guys that were the cooks? Remember that?
Yes.
Remember this?
I don't remember that.
Oh, dude, there were a couple of them. They would take boats out to the past Catalina, cook for a week, and then explode the boat and sink it.
And then
really?
Yeah,
you don't remember that? Bob's like, really? I want to know that cool guy.
I only like the opiates.
Well, the one thing that I'm dealing with is that now that they're doing both together, there's a syndrome that's happening where
there's opiates and meth.
Opiates and meth, heroin and meth, or fentanyl and meth.
Yeah.
Both. What's happening is that the cravings for meth come back so fast, overwhelm the cravings for opiates.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Initially.
That makes sense.
And it goes through the roof. Then the avoidance of the crash, I'm getting them in detox. I can't contain them unless I can put them to sleep. Yeah. If they have their mind going and they're awake, they're going to AWOL.
And this
they're
is and this leave. Is and this is the combo AMA. Of opiate withdrawal with crack with stimulant craving.
With stimulant craving.
That makes perfect sense.
I can't get them landed fast enough with.
Well, let me remind you of one such case we everyone saw on Celebrity Rehab, Mr. Tom Sizemore. That's what that was. And if you remember, I put him to sleep for 2 days.
That's what we
more than
to
2 days.
Yes.
More than 2 days.
Yeah, so but I put him to sleep for a while.
Really
you had
struggling.
To do that. Yeah.
And I remember
that.
The TV production wasn't too happy because they
he kept sleeping.
Yeah, because he was asleep and they wanted him up, but we could have never contained him when he was awake.
He caused enough trouble in 2 weeks. See, we didn't need him a third week.
No, not really. But and then on top of this, okay. Any predisposition for any kind of disorder.
Mental illness. Yeah.
Mental illness, depression, anxiety,
thought
any
disorders,
mood
yeah.
disorder,
yeah.
thought disorder. Yeah. Anything is completely exacerbated
on
the spot, super quickly. Now I have people acting like schizophrenics.
Mm-hmm.
People don't know what's wrong with them.
Mm-hmm.
The parents are completely confused. They're committing crimes. They're going. They're attracted to Skid Row.
Mm-hmm.
All they want to talk about in group is Skid Row and how great it is.
Oh.
I'm like, what?
See?
Even I wanted nothing to do with Skid Row.
What is wrong?
I was as close as Shelley came to Skid Row.
That's right.
But I was going back and forth.
What is wrong with our
but
government?
We weren't even on Skid Row. We were off Skid Row.
I was on Bonnie Bray myself.
Right, which was not Skid Row.
MacArthur Park was sort of
right. Which was not Skid Row by a long shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although, if you've been by MacArthur Park lately, it's sort of looked like Skid Row.
Is it?
Well, that homeless thing and that that it's so sad. Because I have to drive my kids around this town and
LA
explain
Times.
Why there's tents. Because you live in Mount Washington, right? That's where Elvis lives. Yeah. Getting off here at Figueroa, there's 300 homeless people just milling about.
And not only that, the tents are there, and then they have little city dumps.
Yes.
They have little dumps developing, and rodents and insects and everything that goes with
this
that.
This is my big problem.
Yep.
This is my big problem. Because, okay, so the homeless are attracting more people to go down there.
To give them food.
They're giving them.
That ends up being rat food.
Right.
Yeah.
Because
they don't need food.
They don't need food.
They believe the ruse that they need food and
they
their
don't need
help.
Food.
No.
They don't want food. They don't need food. There's so much food in LA. I mean, there's so much food here.
Yeah,
it's
I know.
Ridiculous.
So you end up just creating a dump and a pile for rats and insects.
All right. So the actual cravings for meth are so superseding the cravings for opiates.
Well, to be fair, it's not the stimulant craving. If anybody's ever been a nicotine addict, understands stimulant craving. It's a very similar
craving.
I'm going
to have some Nicorette gum right now.
Right.
Okay, still
stimulant
is nicotine.
Stimulant is the worst craving. But opiate withdrawal, people like to avoid that. So you got the craving and the withdrawal they want to avoid. So it's avoidance with craving.
With the craving, which causes this person to be relatively untreatable. Now, if you add in psychotic symptoms.
Oh, yeah.
I have.
Why can't people just doing what I did to Mr. Tom's eyes?
Because it's a residential setting.
Oh.
Everybody's too scared.
I don't know
it takes
why
a lot to put
no, you
people
do,
will not
Shelley.
Use Zyprexa at every given moment. But that's just me.
Or knock them out. I had a kid that was presenting as schizophrenic. After me being there for 2 hours, I figured out he smuggled meth in. Right? They were treating him like he's a schizophrenic, needs to be put in UCLA psych hospital. Yeah. I was like, no, we need to give him some Ativan. Well, I wanted to give him Ativan.
Well, intramuscular Ativan. Intramuscular Ativan, provided they've been off the opiate long enough.
Because that's all they would do at UCLA anyway.
No.
What would they do at UCLA?
They'd give him Zyprexa.
Observe them.
Yeah, and observe them. Put him in a container.
The kid thinking you're poisoning his food and you're working with the government and he's on the verge of violence and they're only going to give him Zyprexa.
In the emergency room, they'd probably give him Ativan.
They might use Risperidol. They might use things like that. They might use some Ativan. But
what about if he got violent in the response to come and get him, they're going to give him Ativan?
They're going to give him Ativan.
You guys, when he gets violent, that's going to be a police action.
Yeah, no, it's not anymore. Yeah. They aren't even called.
Good.
There's so much violence. The EMTs are dealing
with
it.
So I want to talk about
the EMTs are dealing
with it. What about
the
violence, you guys? Like, I want
violence,
this is what I want.
Okay.
I want all these police pursuits. I want drug test results.
While the helicopters.
I want to know.
While the helicopters are
I want
are
to marry
them.
The
you know that's all
the
meth,
insane
right?
Insane violence.
But the
all meth.
Yeah.
Car chases.
Yeah,
I want people to know what
the whole
reason for this.
Yes.
Because this is insane.
I agree.
We are looking at a drug epidemic.
Yep.
And we are like publicizing it as if it's a car chase.
Car chase, silly people, high real estate prices.
Right.
that's our narrative.
Like, what are we talking about?
Listen, I am 100%
ready. I can't stand it anymore. If I see one more shirtless dude doesn't have any shoes on coming out of one of these vehicles
that
they've been on a high
anymore.
Speed.
Yeah, I know. They're always tweaking.
They're always tweaking, like, guys.
Do people not know that word anymore? You don't hear it that much anymore.
No,
like, that's a pejorative word. That's a negative word.
Listen,
no, that's what it's like. That's a perfect description of what being out of your mind on meth is.
You're not allowed
tweaking.
You're out of your mind.
It's pejorative to say addict now.
Yes.
You can't say drug addict.
No,
that's so crazy.
So,
but I need you on KABC on the radio show that I do because Los Angeles, we need to get to Los Angeles and San Francisco. And
we have to.
And make them listen.
We'll
do that.
I'll
put you on the phone. And we'll do
I would need drug results, okay?
I'm not sure we're going to get that.
We need to marry these things, these events that are happening chronically every single day with the real underlying reason to get people's attention that, like, if your kid is using meth, you need to do something.
Immediately.
Like, pronto.
Yeah. Yep.
Right away.
Yep.
Then I also want to know, okay, here's the paranoia difference between a cocaine addict who's been up a meth addict who's been up and a schizophrenic.
Schizophrenic can look like the meth addict. They get very close. But
no, they don't.
Well, hold on. Let's go. So the cocaine addict, we're really talking smoking cocaine. When you smoke cocaine, you are...
Or shoot cocaine.
You are by yourself. Yes. You have put foil on your windows. Mm-hmm. And when you look out the window, you are seeing uniformed officers.
Cops. SWAT.
But I've even heard Navy.
Remember the gal, she passed away, that I wrote Trust Fund Girl about?
Don't remember.
I used to smoke coke with her, and she always stopped police officers outside.
Well, that's cocaine.
Yeah.
Right.
That's just cocaine.
That's cocaine. Yeah. So
that's the psychosis.
Meth is a much more pernicious, slow onset.
You're putting poison in my food.
No, hold on. Hold on. Very bizarre. It's usually really bizarre.
Very bizarre.
Yeah, like the
but
Russian
But it's always
mafia.
Family.
Family, friends, coworkers, neighbors.
Always.
Yeah, always.
No, they're in the rehabs now. It's the rehab.
So hold on.
And the rehabs, anything they're familiar with.
Anything nearby.
The rehabs, very Drew, you got to understand. We have replaced families. They've been living with us for 8 years.
So hold on.
That's a different subject. Hold on, for eight years. I have tons to say about that.
Okay, but the meth psychosis, slow to resolve, take months sometimes.
Very slow to resolve.
Yeah, and bizarre.
Is that all?
Usually 2 months, it's gone. And usually 2 weeks, a lot better. Well, okay. But it's disruptive to relationships because it's all the people they're close to that they are paranoid about.
Exactly. And why they're killing their family members.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
meth is the drug of violence.
That's why I want that also to be brought to light in all of these strange, husband murders wife and child.
Yep.
This happened. Murdered the coworkers. What's going on?
Okay. You'll love this. So I detoxed a 45-year-old lifetime meth addict at my sober living in Beechwood by myself, just me and him, right?
Yeah.
With a doctor helping.
Interesting.
A doctor helping. Yeah. And he would sometimes, and this is not week two, this is month two, he would come and knock on my door because I lived there too, and he would say, Bob, I'm not on celebrity rehab right now, right? There's no television cameras here.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not taking advantage of me. You're not embarrassing me,
right?
And I would say, dude, I love you. Come here. No, I would never do that to you. I wasn't telling him you're crazy for thinking that.
Right.
I just reassured him.
Yeah.
And that was consistently the thing that he was on celebrity rehab.
Right.
Okay, well, that's
because the familiarity between you
and
celebrity
cameras
rehab,
and blah, blah, blah.
100%.
So now, schizophrenics, it's usually more subtle, more grandiose.
Much more grandiose.
I am Jesus. No, we can go all the way there, but it's all often, hey man, I got a record deal, and they're just waiting for me over here, and it's usually kind of even makes sense sometimes, unless you really listen to it, you're like, oh no, and it gets weirder and weirder and more grandiose, and what you miss is, and oh by the way, I'm on the street and I can't take care of myself. That just gets completely overlooked.
Because the grandiosity is there,
and
usually the paranoia is more. Government.
It's more characteristic of schizophrenia.
Yes.
They're beaming thoughts into my head. The television is talking to me. There's a chip.
There is an overdiagnosis of schizophrenia in drug addicts by really not very good psychiatrists.
Well, they have.
Is that a nice way of saying it?
Well, I think because doctors don't ever see the arc of recovery anymore.
Right.
They don't even wait to see what the diagnosis is. Sometimes you can't tell, and you got to wait and see.
You have to wait and see.
Yeah, if they clear, and they have no history, and they're 35, and they've been smoking meth, okay, that's
meth.
Yeah.
It's meth.
So,
if it's 18, and there's a family history
there
of an
you
uncle,
go. Yeah.
Then it's, there is a possibility.
Yeah,
a
real possibility.
Well, yeah, they need to see this guy that I was hugging. He's now going to work at Aloe.
Mm-hmm.
He's amazing.
Right.
Everyone loves him.
Yeah.
He has a deep, rich experience and understanding and compassion for addicts.
Oh, my gosh.
It's like it's been a year and a half now, right?
And what I keep screaming at Shelley also, people go, well, what are we going to do? What are we going to do with all this addiction? Why can't we at least promote 12-step as a
I'm bringing
a
it back.
Free.
She's bringing it back.
If anybody can bring it back, she can bring it back.
You understand? It's free and it works.
Right.
That's all you need to know.
And so you just have to. When I was talking to one of the therapists yesterday, I said, because she's been in the field now a little while, and she's like, "Why don't we do more 12-step stuff? Like, why don't we talk about it more?" And I said, "Well, one of the reasons is that when you introduce it, you're going to get a lot of feedback.
And pushback.
And pushback. Yeah. And a lot of factual stuff they're going to try to throw at you.
Yeah.
And if you don't have the experience of what it is really,
yeah.
then you might get lost in that.
Not only that.
You have to be very strong when you present yes. the information and know what it is.
And to be fair, part of what's missing is the community endorsement. By community, I mean nationwide endorsement. The reason we were able to do it in the hospital the three of us worked at
right.
is everybody had the same message. Go to right. the meetings. Show up. You got to go. It's fine.
But I
know you don't
say,
like it. Just show up.
Insurance
blah, blah, blah.
Companies are pushing 12-step sponsors
Good. Good.
And meetings.
Yeah,
Good.
I
so
noticed
I
that the last year
like,
or
are.
So. Last year or so, they want to see that back in the
right.
documentation.
Well, I'm saying we need to educate the public about this and make it a law. The government wants to do something. There's something nice and
they
free
can
they
right.
can do
they
right
can
there.
Do. Right.
Just get behind right. it, endorse it, mm-hmm. acknowledge that there are issues philosophically you may not like, but just
but
get
cares?
In there. Who cares?
Yeah, who cares?
It's get in there.
Yeah, it's a lot
get
of
in the
like,
rooms.
Who cares, and you'll figure it out
yeah.
when you figure it out.
Yeah,
but
you'll figure
it
out
works
for you.
But that's how I got sober. But there has to be what's going to happen if you don't. And right now, we don't have a lot of
consequence.
Stick and
yeah,
consequence,
yeah. Yeah.
right?
It's true.
Because we've decided we don't want to put drug addicts in jail, mm. so we can't threaten to put them in jail. That's how I got sober. A judge said, you're going to go to prison. You go to AA.
That worked for a lot of you guys, I think.
It worked a lot.
It
worked really good, and it doesn't exist
time.
Anymore.
Yeah.
Now,
I'm not sure we can afford that
now,
anymore.
But watch. But right. now, and this isn't about rehab in general. Shelley and I both work at rehabs that I push it. It's part of the thing. I share my experience, strength, and hope every time I talk. Mm-hmm. But it's not mandatory.
12-step.
Because you won't have any clients. They'll go to the place who says it's not mandatory.
Okay.
I prefer to say it's not mandatory and talk about it in interesting ways and life-sharing ways.
Free.
It's not free. Rehab costs money.
No, 12-step is free.
Yeah, but,
free.
But they're never going to go to it.
Well,
the courts aren't going to send them to it.
Well, to be fair,
the parents don't believe in it, right? Parents don't believe in it. The courts aren't going to send you to it. So rehab is the only place you're going to be introduced to it.
Mm-hmm.
And if rehabs don't introduce you to it,
yeah.
you're never going to be exposed to
it's
it.
True.
So I'm very.
But I'm saying maybe the government or maybe the facing addiction people or somebody
Someone,
to get behind
anyone.
A
we,
giant
we,
campaign
yeah,
to
we need
endorse
to
this.
Do that. And we also, I think what we need to do is we need to be less afraid of what people are going to think about our recommendations. And I am like living proof with 100 other people that have well over 15 to 25 years sober.
Mm-hmm.
That we're just as bad as any of these people that we're seeing. Mm-hmm. And I am
I think
living
we have
proof.
Some fundamentals they don't have.
But what are the fundamentals? Let's sort it out. Let's figure it out. Let's
that
let's
you've
put
been
it
self-supporting
on
and taking care of yourself since you were 16 years old?
Yeah. yeah.
So that was
true.
A-
it's not the economy. You're when the last episode that we talked
yeah,
about,
yeah.
you blame the economy. I don't.
So you blame
I know
the parents
there's a lot. You got to work hard.
The dependency created by the parents.
It's this whiny, snivelly excuses for everybody. There's no excuse.
Yeah. I mean, I do promote a certain level of self-effacement. Like, you know, nobody – and how I present it is that, listen, nobody's going to care about your drug addiction but other drug addicts. So you need
or,
to be
or
around
help you. Yeah,
other
help
drug
you with
addicts
it and care
right.
about,
because nobody cares
that's
care
true.
About,
that you
that's
have
the same
destroyed
thing
your life.
That's true.
Using crack
other
cocaine
drug addicts
or,
will care.
But you
about
know
it.
Who
they
care?
Are the only ones that
you know
care.
Who care? They're bullshit codependent parents who cannot tolerate their child suffering. Right.
Hang on, Facebook is asking us for something here.
Okay.
Hold on.
They want us to answer questions.
Oh,
okay, let's
is that what
answer
they want?
Questions.
All right, but
okay,
Shelley, you said
I didn't mention.
You had a whole thing about the family of rehab.
Yes, the family of rehab and how we become the dysfunctional family.
Yes, we are.
And we become the dysfunctional family within the milieu, and then I become the principal or the school marm or the nun or whatever they want to put me in. And then
the shark.
The shark, like, no, it's not even that exciting now because I'm administrative.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
now
yeah.
I'm just like walking around with the, you know, some badge or something. They're like, who is this person?
Sheriff.
We just want to stay away from her, whatever that is.
But it's so, you understand that that's how I conceptualized our team at Los Encinas.
Right.
A healthy family.
Okay.
That's how, and we all had, that's I why think, I asked about Sasha a few minutes ago. I mean, we all got along great, we all understood each other.
I think at our place in Malibu, at her place in Sunset and Sepulveda, I hate saying Bel Air, and Sunset. I mean, is that the height of arrogance, Bel Air?
It's all right. That's what it's called. It's a name.
I don't know.
It is silly, but whatever.
But so there are functional families there, right? Because Josh and Paul are there where they were when I was going by there all the time. The staff is great. The techs are great, right? Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying in the dysfunctional family, Drew, I'm talking about the family of rehab.
Yeah.
That will take somebody who just left Shelley's rehab yesterday because they didn't like it.
And let them split.
And let them split. And then cause
Foster splitting. Foster dysfunction. Foster them running avoidance. Foster
align with
all
the client.
The
yeah,
stuff.
They're shitty. They don't know what they're doing.
You can't do that. Yeah,
they do it all the time.
All day long. All day.
I've had clients walk out when I told them, dude, you, no phone, no nothing.
Yeah.
You know, they did egregious violation, right? Yeah. They say, fuck you, I'll just walk to Cliffside. And I'm like,
Cliffside
is walkable from my rehab.
Or,
another rehab. And they'll accept them.
Yes. They will not say, well, what rehab did you do? If I start asking questions, they get really defended. Yeah. You know, because they're up to shenanigans. And also other treatment centers, dare I say this?
Recruit.
Yeah.
Recruit
they
from?
Actually recruit from. Yes.
Drew, you don't know.
This is why I'm outside.
Drew, you don't know.
You're coming back in with us.
Come on,
you're
going to
get back into it with
can
us.
Can you
so
just
we're
consult?
Straighten it out.
Yes, I consult. But, okay. but it's still, it's... I.
No, we should. She's
not coming back in anymore. Yeah. She was there when I was doing it for all those years.
All right.
Dr. Drew Centers of America.
Here's a question.
All right.
Go.
Bernadette. Hey, Bernadette.
Hello.
What do you want to know?
Do you taper clients with
Suboxone,
buprenorphine, or other comfort meds?
Yes,
do you recommend Let me finish the goddamn question.
See how it is.
Do you recommend long-term buprenorphine?
Norphine.
Suboxone. That's Suboxone.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, okay. It's the same thing.
Shelly, you
explain that, though, because I don't know.
Shelly will explain it and give her answer.
Okay, so...
Just in this question, embedded in that question is the notion that opioid withdrawal is intolerable.
I know.
Did I ever, in all the years we were together, say,
no, you did
God,
not.
What are we going to get somebody off heroin? I can't seem to get anybody off heroin. It never was an issue. It never was a problem. Everybody was off in 3 to 5 days.
Say
and I
thing.
Never wished I had
tell,
something more.
Tell Bernadette right now, no one has ever died of heroin withdrawal.
Well, you can have a complication, have a heart attack. Or like Jerry Garcia did or something. But the opioid withdrawal itself is manageable in good hands. It's 3 to 5 days. It's nothing. It's nothing. It's not that big a deal. It's unpleasant.
But
it's like having the flu for three days.
The industry standard.
Yeah, so go ahead.
That we have to compete
with. Yes,
is an easier, kinder, softer.
We have to give medicine, right?
Yeah.
As to taper, to smooth out the symptoms, and make their stay tolerable.
Okay, but then what happens is
they
get down
almost
around,
pleasant. They tolerable, get, almost pleasant.
But they get down around 8 milligrams or 4 milligrams, they start having withdrawal.
Craving.
The doctor goes, just stay on this. Just stay on
some
this.
Some do, but not
some
so much
do.
Anymore. But here's
but
the thing. But
it's
what she's
going,
saying.
That's going out of style.
Oh, good.
I got to tell you.
Oh, good.
I gotta tell you.
But get back to the original point.
Don't step on Shelly.
Get back to the original point, though. They are not suffering opiate withdrawals because of Suboxone.
Okay.
So then the meth craving is still there. Yeah. It never went away.
Yeah. No,
and
very
you can't
high.
Use the Ativan with the Suboxone. You can't
but we're
do that.
Always – now this is what we're doing. And so this to Bernadette's question is that we will use it very sparingly.
Okay.
I will never start somebody at a 24, 16.
Mm-hmm.
No, they're coming in. They're going to taper very quickly because I need to observe them for 3 days after their last dose because that's when they're going to have withdrawal symptoms.
And they vomit all over you and stuff like
that. Yes. So I need to keep them in residential to observe them afterwards.
You have such a fun job.
Oh, but,
here's a question.
There's a guy from Matthew said his best friend died on Suboxone. So, you know.
Mm-hmm. But let me ask you too. So often, got a pretty good doctor, the internal medicine doctor, right?
Good.
Even if you're on 24, she'll just start you at 8 and see what happens.
Exactly.
She doesn't titrate from 24 down like these other assholes.
No, because the real withdrawal starts.
All you need is 8.
Yeah, the real withdrawal starts below 8. That's where the real withdrawal starts.
Exactly.
Kicks in.
Yeah, so if somebody comes in and they say they're on 24 milligrams, everybody goes, oh my God, oh my God.
No, just kick them
out.
You
just give them 8 upon admission and see what happens, like Shelly said, for 2 or 3 days.
Yeah, the real withdrawal kicks in later.
Exactly.
At 4.
So there's, so it's 4, 2.
Yeah.
There's nothing to worry about under those circumstances.
Good.
Well, you got 7 million Americans on maintenance, so there's obviously something to worry about.
Can I do another question?
Yes, please.
Okay, this is from Sarah. What exactly is it about 12 steps that's so helpful? I'm genuinely interested to know. I've been alcohol-free 14 months and I'm thriving, but keep hearing from Dr. Drew that I still need to do 12 steps.
Well, there's several things. Well, one thing is the support of a fellowship. You need that. You need to see the disease in all its manifestations. You need to be reminded of the spectrum of what can happen. But most importantly, the 12 step is a guided relationship in an intimate encounter with somebody who struggles with the same condition. And that changes how you regulate your emotions. And unless you change how you regulate your emotions, your alcoholism is still at risk. Whatever caused you to drink in the first place is still there, and you may drive you back. In addition to now you've got the disease active that's driving you back as well. Now, if you're in therapy or something, okay. I mean, that's probably okay.
But you need
to. That's a little
too.
Bit of a different relationship.
It's a different
relationship. I've
studied
the ones that have gotten sober in therapy, right?
Yeah.
They have gregarious workplaces. Mm-hmm. They have large families.
They have others.
They have great relationships with their parents. There's a whole – most addicts, it says, I believe Shelly and I suffer from a disease of isolation and loneliness.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
So
that's true.
So you need people, and dysfunctional families and alcoholic family systems don't give that.
That's right. Absolutely, 100%.
So you're going to have to go outside.
Yes.
And when you get sober, all those people, and I believe most of my friends who were using when I got sober are my dear friends, and they do love me. But I couldn't hang out with them.
Yes.
I couldn't get my soul fed by them because
there
was this complete disconnect.
Yes, you
need
people.
Well,
none
of us
had
people. Much to give at that point.
And you spoke to this very vividly.
You got sober
last
before
time.
Me, didn't you? Or after me? Before me.
If you listen to Shelly's last appearance, what's her name, Susan?
I'm sorry?
The woman who's asking the question, what
Hold
is
on,
her name?
Let me scroll up.
Well, Shelly's last appearance, Shelly spoke vividly about the relationship elements in Ivy.
Sarah Ivy.
The relationship elements in recovery are extremely important.
Even friendships. Maureen,
and,
still
and you
to
really
me.
Learn.
Maureen.
Yeah, Maureen. And, yeah. You know,
this
you
woman
still...
was like the real sister I never had.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
She confided in me all the things that brothers and sisters confide in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and when Elijah ran away, when my oldest son ran away at 15, the first time, he ran to her house. And then she called me. She goes,
hey.
Are you missing Elijah right now? And I was like.
You missing a kid?
Yeah.
And she goes, I don't want to. You know, snitch him out, but he's over here. Yeah. And I was like, I said, okay, just keep him there. And then I had DH, who lived in the same building, mm-hmm. another 12-step guy, go over and get him and say, hey, what's going on? Then take him out to eat
it's
and
community.
Get him back home.
It's a real community.
It's a community.
People, there are no communities in America anymore.
There are. They're just not. They're not conducive to what we need.
They are, but they're not very intimate.
I believe people are living in echo chambers in isolation at a laptop.
Bowling Alone book said, you know, the clubs and sort of organizations are waning dramatically in this country. We don't have that kind of thing. But we got to take a little break.
All right.
We'll be right back.
Bam!
Friends at Bergamot are back. It's, of course, a brand that's made an impact on us here. It makes a variety of supplements. They use the extract of the bergamot citrus fruit. It's full of polyphenols. It's a supplement that acts as a natural statin and may improve a number of cardiovascular conditions and fatty liver disease, as well as potentially high blood pressure and other things associated with the metabolic syndrome. Now the makers are bringing you a formulation called Bergamot Sport that provides all the same cardiovascular benefits, but with some additives designed to aid athletes and those with an active lifestyle. Bergamot Sport may help improve stamina as well as reduce recovery time and muscle inflammation. In an ongoing study, professional soccer players were asked to use Bergamot Sport, and the documented improvements have been impressive. I use the product. First Lady of Loves uses the product, the Bergamot Femme. Physicians and cardiologists around the world are recommending it. For a limited time, our listeners can save 10% on their order by entering the code DRDREW at checkout. That's Dr. Drew at checkout, all one word. To try Bergamot Sport for yourself, visit bergamet.com. That is B-E-R-G-A-M-E-T. drdrew.com, or also you can click on the Bergamet banner at drdrew.com. Be sure to talk to your physician before you use any Bergamet products. In fact, before you use any product or supplement, be sure to talk to your doctor. Okay, we're back. Do I need to remind everybody about this? Or yes, our friends at Bergamet Sport. That's right, Bergamet is back. Hydrolite is here as well. Don't forget those guys.
I'm hoping to get sick
so you can
because
use it.
I have super good health insurance now, Shelly. It started February 1st.
I get
premium. I get limo drives
me
to the
hospital. What do you have?
I don't think so. You get
the what do you have? And I'll tell you if you really have a limo service.
Okay.
I have the cream, the top blue shield.
Guys are almost killed me because they misdiagnosed an ectopic pregnancy.
Wow.
What? See?
Well, you were all.
This was years ago.
You were also misdiagnosed as what? When you had the Xanax withdrawal.
I've been misdiagnosed.
Schizophrenia.
Schizophrenia, right?
Oh, no, not schizophrenia.
That's a bummer.
Mania.
This is how rumors get
mania.
Started.
What were you diagnosed as when you were actually having Xanax withdrawal?
Bipolar 2.
Yeah.
Mania.
Bipolar 2. Well, I mean, I gotta say, it wasn't the picture of mental health.
Was a picture of mental health.
What she's saying is she was complicated.
I was very complicated. I was not doing well. I had a lot of symptoms. It wasn't great.
Where were you at that point? That Xanax thing.
Well,
you were in Ingleside by some chance, were you?
No.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I was at Thalian's.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that was a pretty good place except for the toilets.
Yeah, it wasn't
bad. I was in there a couple times.
For the toilets and Thalians?
Well, bathrooms.
It's the Cedars.
Cedars. I mean, they used to have a great outpatient mental health clinic.
Yes, they did.
I mean, they really
did.
And that's what – I think that was the really key to me getting involved with – like the mental illness and like sorting all of that stuff out is that they enrolled me in that program that was so great. It was like a sliding scale. You saw, you know, people regularly and they really cared. And
I
think
that
even though I had
to,
yeah, I was in the building.
But it's always with mental health treatment. The one bit
you know, it's gone now. What she's saying saved her is gone.
But let me tell you something. That there's all this psychological and psychiatric research out there about differing techniques of intervention for psychotherapeutics or whether it's DBT or CBT or whatever it is.
I'm all down with seeking safety right now.
Okay. Well, it turns out whatever technique you use, it has minimal impact as compared to the therapist themselves. In other words,
Who it is.
And their empathic style, their
of
ability
course.
To connect. So your ability to be empathic is vastly more important than what technique you're using to treat somebody.
I know.
So my point's going to be that isn't it amazing how – and it shouldn't amaze us, but isn't it interesting how much the quality of any given treatment program is really, strictly speaking, dependent on the quality of the staff. Thalians had a great staff for about 15 years.
They did.
Yeah, and maybe 10 years. They were really good for a while there.
Good nurses.
And just people that gave a shit and knew what they were doing. It's about all it boils down to.
Well, here, I don't know, because none of us have been in that situation for years. I was in Thalians twice on a hold. I was at CPC Westwood on 10-day hold. The nurses were so great and funny, and they interacted with you, and they...
Why do you think Sasha was such a key
but
part of
I
our team?
I don't think there's nurses like that anymore in
They're
those
hard
places.
To find. They're harder to find. We used to have a whole ton of them at Los Encinas. It used to be mostly that was there. I used to hang out and just BS with them because they were so interesting. They were interesting people.
Well, I have to start utilizing people who are more medical savvy now in my detox unit. Because
nursing, you mean? Or?
Just in
Everybody.
General as techs, like they need to be more savvy with medical stuff. Mm. And I need medical assistants that are techs. I need mental health workers that they used to have at Los Encinas who knew how to do vitals and knew how to de-escalate.
You know, one good nurse would do a trick.
Yeah, I have a great nurse.
Okay,
I have one great nurse, but I have three shifts.
One shift.
Oh, okay.
One
shift.
So, I got three shifts. So I really need people to learn de-escalation techniques. And I don't know I don't know how you can teach a lot of de-escalation stuff.
I'm just thinking about that.
Really,
you were there.
Yeah.
Did we only have two shifts? No, we had three.
This is Sasha and Grace. No. Who was the third one?
Overnight.
They're
overnight people.
Yeah.
Who were they?
You never met them.
I never met them.
Because you never saw them.
Were they good?
We had some issues.
We had some major issues because they were asleep.
I only remember two nurses.
Well, Sasha and Grace were our key. You know, they were our
right.
key
and so
people.
You have the great nurses.
So somebody
during
came on
the
at
day,
11 o'clock at night till 7 in the morning.
And sometimes they were good, and sometimes they were not.
Yes, so. Exactly.
And that's the problem.
But staying awake is really important.
Yes,
I find.
Important.
Oh, the text is.
I find it's very important.
It was
to stay
the text
awake.
That were really the problem.
You know, they've come up with this thing, Drew, where the, you have to the text like Aloe. I don't probably your thing too. They have to go around and to this computer chip every hour so that you know they're actually up and walking. Mm. Do you know that?
No, it's interesting.
Do you have that?
No, what we
it's
have,
on their badge, and they have to go to that room and check that room.
Good.
No, that's great. I think that's great.
It only costs like $3,600 bucks.
What we have is, I will look into that for the next rehab. But what we have is we have cameras.
Oh.
So
can you look at them from home on your phone?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Shelly would be looking.
Yeah.
Watch
so they
out,
know
everybody.
So they know that I can see the text and what they're doing any hour. And I can talk to them I see fit.
Through your phone?
Big brother.
You are the queen.
So it'd be cool. Just so random reinforcement is you would just drop in once in a while and start talking. Right. Hey, how's it going in there?
Yeah, you don't have to drive there like we used to have to. You just go, hey, what's going on?
Oh, that's awesome.
Exactly. So you can you
God,
can.
I'm
take
surprised
a look.
You remember all that. For me, it's like, I was supposed to be getting up and doing it.
I remember it.
Oh,
no, when
it's
when,
a nightmare.
When what's her name?
It's such a nightmare.
When Linda Parks took over, she insisted that we go like once a month to the unit at 2 o'clock in the morning, at 3 o'clock in the morning. I was just like, "The fuck is that?"
So you get paid the big bucks for. Come on.
Do you know the story when Shelly caught me? So once I became exempt, meaning I didn't have to clock in and out.
Oh yeah,
right?
I
would check in with her because she's the best, and Luisha and Sasha, at like 9.
Yeah.
Via text at a lot of times. No, PM. There was AM.
Oh, AM.
And then I would come because I did.
You knew to text back then?
I did text.
And I had Blackberries.
And I
had
did,
Blackberries then.
And I did only the 2 o'clock group. So I would come in like at 10 in the beginning sometimes when I knew Blum was coming. I would be there when Blum got there. Mm-hmm. Right? But then I started getting there even later. Like 11.
Later.
And I pulled in one time and Shelly was walking from somewhere with her clipboard. And she goes, are you just getting here right now? And I was like, no, I went to eat.
Yeah, I went to eat. No.
Shelly didn't need a camera. No. She just saw me driving in. Like, where the... Are you just getting here now at 11 a.m.?
What? Must be nice. Must be nice.
But I was there most every time with Barry. Most every time.
Barry was great. I learned
so much
from
him.
This.
You learned what?
I learned so much from Barry.
I know, right?
But I stayed till.
Okay,
eight.
Read an email.
Okay,
another
let's
email.
Do
yeah,
that.
We got emails here too.
And, and they want to know if what kind of underwear the president wears now.
The president.
The questions are going down.
Tidy whitey.
Okay, let me do something here. Here you go. Could you elaborate? Here's something to talk about. More on the difference between people who are opiate dependent versus opiate addicted. Mm-hmm. We sort of made that distinction.
No, I've been talking about that. I talked about it yesterday.
Yeah, and there's probably a Venn
there's
diagram.
There's millions.
But there's
millions of people that don't have the drug addict
full blown
trauma history. Yeah. They have an intact family. Unless
oh my god, did you see the doctor writing a defense of what Tom Petty was given, saying literally in this article says, let's face it, drugs don't cause drug addiction. Trauma does. And it was like, oh my god!
But he had self-admitted drug addiction.
The drugs themselves are nothing to do with the drug addiction.
Oh my!
Those aren't the problem. It's the trauma that motivates the overuse of the drugs. A doctor wrote a long disquisition. All these people are like, oh yes, well, this guy's enlightened.
Oh yes, he knows what he's talking about.
And she runs a gigantic series of drug treatment centers in the East, big ones.
So anyways, we can talk about what I've seen. I've seen a lot of kids that I don't know that they're real drug addicts, but they certainly
start they look
to
like
take on the personality of a drug addict. Yeah. But when you take their history, parents are married still, no sexual abuse, no physical abuse. So then this gets into what are you looking for? Well, boundaryless enmeshment. Mm-hmm. Are these trauma signifiers.
Those are kind of trauma issues. But
they love it. They I have so many clients, I don't know, they'll tell you their parents are their best friend.
Yeah. Well,
Yeah. Wrong. My parents are very supportive. I'm like, supportive of what exactly?
Because you're a loser? What are they supportive of?
What are they supportive of?
They made you dependent, and that's a certain kind of trauma.
It is a certain kind of trauma. Mm-hmm. And I think that also one thing that I've noticed in the practice lately is that there's so much covert trauma. Mm-hmm. There's so much covert stuff going on.
Well, dependencies are all covert stuff.
It's all so covert. Yeah. So the overt isn't there.
What do you mean by covert?
The covert is the underlying parental position.
So in other words, like covert sexual abuse would be
I'm a sex addict.
Well, I'm a sex addict, but my husband's gone for some reason.
Right.
And you're now my little man.
Right.
You're the man at the house. You're my little man. You're my it's grooming. It's a covert grooming.
It's a covert. Yeah. And it's like the surrogate spouse.
Yeah, surrogate spouse is covert sexual abuse.
Yeah, so it's the surrogate spouse or the surrogate, you know,
best friend.
Or whatever, it's the surrogate parent, and these covert
they don't seem to have discomfort from it or reject that. When you're
they
abused,
don't recognize
neglected,
it.
And realize that you were abused and neglected, you get angry. About
it. It's harder.
But the covert stuff isn't that
they're
way.
They're not angry.
The covert stuff is coming from the parental dysfunction unconscious underneath their own consciousness.
That's right.
Know that they're abusing people. They don't know that they're being abusive. That's they think they're being caring.
I don't think abusive is the right word that they would hear. I don't think that can go
in
their brain.
Can't.
No, you can't use that word.
No.
So there's what doesn't happen is the separation. So you have to engage them in a rapprochement of coming and going with you as the secure base.
Exactly.
And that takes a long time.
It takes a very long time. And the covert abuse comes up much later in the therapeutic process because they can't even recognize covert.
Well, because the self isn't fully
developed.
It's not there yet. So it has to emerge, be able to step out and go, oh, what was that?
You have to even create sometimes a level of self that they can even recognize because they're so enmeshed.
I think you're doing this is the kind of stuff you've been talking about the last couple of times you and I have spoken and been on this podcast. Mm-hmm. I think Bob is still very frustrated with this kind of stuff. He does not like it.
I think. They're not going to stop because they're told that that's loving your child. The whole society does that. I see it. I'm at this Mount Washington school.
Mm-hmm.
It's wrong what's going on in parenting in America. Mm-hmm. And no one is saying it's wrong.
Then describe what you mean so people can look at their own stuff.
Elvis had some Christmas recital. Like, who the fuck cares? It's like the 19th one I've been to.
Yeah.
Every father took off work. Mm. Every mother took off work. If you weren't there in that room, you're not a good parent. Mm-hmm. In a social kind of ostracized, and if somebody wasn't there, I watched gals and guys ask where that other parent was. Working. Who fucking cares? They're singing a Peanuts song.
But it's crazy that the
and they all videotape it with iPads too.
The other part, for
what reason? Are you going to really watch that?
Performances are an issue. I don't think, I get what you're saying, but I don't think that's the representation that I'm talking about.
No, this is parents not being parents. So I'll give you the example. Who did we do recitals to? You're a little younger. Who was in the room when you had a recital? The other students.
Sometimes, yeah.
That's who was in the recitals that I sang in. Parents maybe at a nighttime event.
You do them once a year or something.
Yeah,
sort
one
of a
time.
Holiday
this
thing,
is every
whatever.
Month or every 2 months.
My daughter performs. She's a performer. And I go to one of the shows. I can't go to all of them.
Right.
But I go to one of them.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
Or I go to the one on Saturday. Right? But I can't go to all of them. But now she's got a lead role. So I'm going to try to go to all of them. Is that what you're talking about?
No, she's a performer and you're supporting her as an artist.
Right.
I'm talking about just basic elementary school bullshit.
Okay, gotcha.
And all parents are there all the time.
Okay,
opening day of kindergarten, there wasn't enough room in the kindergarten class
for
because there was 22 kids and 44 parents.
What's weird is on the other end, though, the schools complain the parents aren't involved enough. So either not involved or too much.
I don't hear any school person that I've dealt with at Wonderland, Mount Washington, neighborhood schools saying parents aren't involved
enough. Think of the schools.
Nobody's saying
that. Look at the schools,
dude. Look at the schools you're talking about. High end.
Yes. The people you're talking about are
people
who can
afford. Is there a lack
of
volunteers at your school? You know, she's the leader of a charter school.
No, I was a founding parent. Yes, there was a lack of people to show up.
Yeah, you're talking about rarefied air, Bob.
White privilege take off problems. Work.
That's the second time today he said I'm white privileged.
Oh,
this is because my daughter drills this into my head.
Right. So. My daughter too.
White privilege.
Oh,
they would love
all
each other.
Over it.
Your daughter and my daughter would love each other.
Oh, white privilege. Blah, 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 blah.
Well, you're lucky you're not a man.
Nasty right now.
Bad.
No, but so I think it's just get to the back to the assembly thing. I think I was in choir and band, right? It mattered to me that the fucking sixth graders were there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It made me nervous.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I remember we did the Hallelujah Chorus one time, and my mom came. I remember being embarrassed. Like, I hope nobody knows she's
true.
My mother.
Yeah.
But when the kids were there, I was fucking nervous. Like, you're not going to fuck up, are you?
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? Because it's your peers performing
Here's another question. Here's one for you guys. How can I help my 75-year-old mother who suffers from anxiety, osteoarthritis, possibly lupus, which she does not have?
Right, because she's 70.
Exactly. She's 75.
Yeah.
Help her get off Norco and Xanax. She truly believes that she needs both for pain and anxiety. She stays within the prescribed parameters, however, is always anxious and in pain. I get
she's
very
in withdrawal.
Maybe I get very philosophical.
No, I never want to get people like that off.
Right.
I had a doctor.
I'm with you.
I had a doctor who was same thing, 75, and I met. It's actually somebody we all know, father-in-law.
Yeah.
And I met with him, and I said, "You've been taking the same amount of benzos for 25 years. Yeah. You're in withdrawals all the time. That's why you're
feeling the way you're
feeling. Wandering around and kind of didn't know where he was.
Well, but that that's
Alzheimer's too.
That's
right?
70. That's as you age. That's what benzos do to the brain.
But also agitated, irritable, mm-hmm. almost punch the son-in-law.
That's all benzos too.
But that's almost. But that's also like people who have not progressed and connected to their geriatric sort of communities.
And their geriatric states.
Oh, doctors never want to. It turned out he had been self-administering for 25 years. I said, why don't you call a doctor that you like and go to him and say, is this the right amount of benzos?
That's right. Have somebody else manage it.
Because he was like 78.
Managing himself?
Yeah. As soon as you get 80, if people are on opiates and benzos, just enough that they don't hurt themselves,
stay
on it, get the minimum dose necessary. But the benzo part, as you age, really starts to become a problem. Mostly from the standpoint of cognition and irritability and stuff like that.
My grandmother was on Xanax for 20 plus years.
Yeah.
She cognitively developed so much
trouble.
Symptoms.
Yeah.
She literally became,
incapacitated.
Totally incapacitated.
What'd you guys do for her? Anything? Just let it be?
Seroquel. We moved to Seroquel, the doctors were so freaked out by the Seroquel because of the heart condition and because of these.
Right.
Geriatric was so different from anything that I've ever done.
That's correct.
So they were really low doses. But my grandmother had dementia, but the onset of the dementia came with the benzos.
Yep.
And so you couldn't tell what
was what.
Sometimes
it could be minimal cognitive change too, minimal cognitive impairment. And that is enough to make them look demented with the benzos, was the other thing.
She had classic type of dementia where she saw little animals and children.
Well, little animals and children. Turns out that's as you age, did she have vision problems?
Yes.
Yeah, macular degeneration.
They see
little animals and horses, people on horseback.
Yes, that's what she saw.
That's the macular degeneration. That's not her cognition.
Okay, so that wasn't even cognition.
But get back to this person. The drugs they're taking aren't working for the anxiety and pain. They need to go to a doctor and try something else.
Right. The philosophical issue is this: we don't approach this as addiction anymore.
No,
at that point,
you're not recommended to get that person off drugs.
Maybe the Xanax or maybe on something different or whatever. But yes, that's generally the correct answer.
Okay, we have another family crisis here.
Okay,
so Sandy's been asking a bunch of questions, and everybody wants to know. Okay, so What's the definition of trauma? What your opinion of a divorced mother who takes her 6-year-old son out to a bar, trolling? And then the last one was, what do you say to a 12-year-old who found private photos of you and his stepmother who shared photos with his friends?
Wait, hold on here.
So this is the same person.
Okay.
Wait.
So the six-year-old going to a bar.
Was this person as a 6-year-old going to the bar with his mother? Is that what he's saying?
It says, what your opinion of a divorced mother who takes her 6-year-old son out to a hotel bar?
Okay. Hotel bar. I call that woman ill.
Yeah.
And the child traumatized. Yes. That is highly traumatic.
What is your definition of trauma?
That is trauma. That is highly traumatic.
I used to go to the bar with my dad. It was pretty fun.
And look at what happened to you.
Yeah, and it worked pretty well.
Exactly.
But you hear what she said, trolling for men.
That's covert.
Covert sexual
abuse. That's covert.
That's the covert sexual abuse.
Yes, exactly.
And then what do you say to a 12-year-old who found private photos of you and his stepmother who shared photos with his friends?
Wait, of you?
I don't know.
I can't put it
together.
This
happens more often. Let me help you.
Maybe she didn't describe it.
You ever heard of an iCloud?
Yeah.
This stuff is causing this kind of trouble.
Okay,
everywhere.
All right.
Okay.
Right?
It sounds like one issue is that one stepmother is sharing photos with the child's friends.
Yes.
Covert sexual abuse.
More, it's probably the
same
person.
No, I think the kid found him and he's sharing them with his friends.
But that's another issue.
That's a different issue. Right. But I think it's probably the same woman in both cases. That's
our feed's a little, it lags behind a little bit. So we're gonna wait and hear if she responds, but maybe you answered a question.
iCloud is a dangerous thing, Drew.
Yeah, I get that. Listen, the internet, the whole social media thing.
And I feel like if people...
Or maybe after she went to the bar and got drunk, she accidentally showed the pictures to the 12-year-old son.
Regardless of if it's an accident or not, it's still trauma.
Yeah.
Yes.
Doesn't matter what condition the parent is in.
No, I'm trying to hold the parents responsible for this iCloud. So it happened to me in the negative. I saw something I shouldn't have seen.
When?
It's heartbreaking. You just don't want to see it, right?
Yeah. So here's the answer.
So that somehow this is this. And it happened to another friend of mine in New York where the 16-year-old daughter, all of a sudden, pictures of her and her boyfriend.
This is why you don't do the
you
sex
can,
thing.
No. Okay. Yeah. I
no,
think
but it's just any photo you take with your phone will load into the iCloud.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I think the 12-year-old found the pictures and is showing his, her. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. Gotcha.
I'm telling you, this stuff is happening all the time.
Yes.
And nobody's talking about it.
Yeah.
That's bad.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, everybody's
phones are connected with their computer.
Yes.
And connected, so you have to, like, not do that.
Don't be taking pictures of yourself without clothes on.
I don't know why people like to do that.
Yeah.
I don't either.
I mean, it is a real issue. It's traumatizing. It is trauma. However, it happens.
But let's talk about pornography for a second. 12-year-olds are already seeing pornography on the internet.
Yeah.
That's more traumatizing than
we don't even
this
know.
Situation.
Yes, we didn't even know the full effect of that yet.
Well, that's
do you remember
when
you were in the sex addiction show? No, wait a minute. Yes. No, it was we have one when one of our patients showed Mary Carey some pictures of himself.
Yes,
that to me was when that happened. Mm-hmm. I was like, "What is he doing?" Who knew? That was the beginning of a whole. Well, you knew what that was then?
Of course.
I never even heard of that until he did that.
I've been around sex addicts my whole life. I guess that's a lot of sex addiction.
But the point is that.
I mean, I call it addiction. Somebody else calls it pathology. I don't know. What is
but
it?
But he was doing something that every 19-year-old does now.
Yes.
Which is weird.
I just think that parents aren't stopping themselves and thinking, I'm a parent. They're acting like teenagers a lot of time. I see it a lot.
Yes,
where they
definitely
want their freedom as a teenager. I'm a parent.
There's a guy
named, you're a parent all the time. The teenage shit has to go.
A guy named Jordan Peterson talks about this a lot, and he really thinks particularly men are underdeveloped. Narcissism is a primitive personality state. It's an underdeveloped personality, and we're staying in these sort of Peter Pan modes. Mm-hmm. We're staying children. We're staying adolescent. Mm-hmm. We're not becoming fully engaged.
You want to know
adults.
Why I think it is? Because I've dealt with a lot of my peers, let's say my friends, depression. When men hit their 45, 50.
Yeah, but if you're not developed by the time you're 25.
They revert back to prior behaviors where they felt more alive and more alive is what I described as more than
anything.
That's
narcissism. I'm old and depressed, and I can't find meaning anymore.
I get by a motorcycle. That's exactly.
Yeah, I'm going to be 25 and deny my age, and that's narcissism. writ large.
No, but wasn't it called Midlife Crisis before? Yeah. I think it's going on now.
It was called that, and it was bullshit. It was strictly assholes who are narcissistic.
Well, most
who
of my friends are kind of that way.
That was always an excuse for horrible behavior, Midlife Crisis. And by the
way, have you witnessed it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely.
But you agree with me that men are sort of underdeveloped a little bit?
And women
become then aggressive and dominating, trying to get men to join the adult population.
Yeah, to become adults. Yeah, yeah. And then it has like a codependency flavor develops out of that.
Can I ask a question? Yeah. Can you answer that woman's question, what to say to a 12-year-old? Who's
get help.
I would say that might like need to help? Go into family therapy, yeah. right? Yeah.
That's
to discuss
not,
that.
That's not a parenting issue. That
he
is
needs
a mental health
talk
issue.
Talk to somebody.
Yeah, you need to get somebody
but
either
I guarantee
family
you,
therapist
he's looking
or
at porn too, for sure. It's not by accident he found those photos. It's not by accident he found the photos.
And clean up your phone and clean up your photos and you know, and also, I mean, but don't like try to sweep it under the rug like it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Because that's a big mistake.
But I don't trust, I don't think that average person knows how to deal with that.
No, I think it definitely needs a therapist involved.
Here's a good one. How do I get a judge to court? No. Yes, to court order my son to rehab. Currently in jail for the 7th time in 4 years. Goes back to stealing, so he has money for drugs. Put him in rehab 3 years ago. Walked out 2 weeks later. Please help me.
Where at? Where does the person live?
Can't tell from this.
Well, you can try to get...
Area code, no.
Drug court.
209. What's area code 209?
209.
Don't know.
Yeah, look it up. But yeah, drug court. But, you know, if the judge were going to mandate court order treatment, it's got to be like a year or two.
Yeah, it's got to be a long term.
Not a couple of months. That won't do it. And maybe even 3 or 4 years. And in some states, they have good in-prison rehab treatments. You know,
where?
Like Indiana. Indiana is amazing stuff.
Well, good, because Indiana is going down the rabbit hole from
meth.
Meth. Violent crimes are up. Indiana is actually experiencing incredible crisis in, you know.
I went over there. What's 209? You know
that's like Modesto, Stockton, Lake Arrowhead area.
So in California,
there's
we
drug
don't
court
have
up there.
In custody, but we don't have good in custody programs.
I mean, I'm
going to
look more into what you've heard about Ohio because I haven't heard that.
I went to Amber, who was one of the teen moms, was
arrested. Yeah, there's like 40 beds and she's a celebrity, right?
Hold on. She was arrested for fentanyl. She actually threw herself on the court and said, I'm going to die if you don't put me in prison. Put her in for 5 years. Year one, she found her way into a program.
It's like 40 beds.
In this one prison, which is a relatively small prison.
There's 10,000 people dying every 6 months.
But the quality of care there was exceptional.
Good.
Is there something up with her right now, Amber?
New boyfriend, they're worried about it, blah, blah, blah. That's what I'm hearing. I'm going to see them in a couple
of... I saw an email.
I'm going to see them in March, so...
Those pilot programs that place they're having, they do have them. We have one here in Linwood Jail. It's like 80 beds.
So what does she do? What does she do? Good. Find a judge that's sympathetic? Long-term prison? There are programs in California prisons.
Yeah, but I think we need more information on what the drugs... Are there violent crimes? What kind of crimes are being committed?
It
might be mental illness.
It's true.
But
you know,
not,
we don't know what it is from that email.
But
like
why
exactly
not get
how to
her
advise
thing.
Them.
Here's an interesting thing. In my heart of hearts, if it's mental illness, I got to ride everywhere all the time, and I got to do for my child that has mental illness, mm-hmm. right? If it's a drug addict mm-hmm. and they're grown ass adults, mm-hmm. I don't ride far.
Sure.
Right. There's too much doing for these drug addict kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think that
mixing. So an easy, again, a free service, go to Al-Anon and just put your ass in there. Yeah, put your ass in there.
I love Al-Anon for this.
And see where it goes and let the cards fall.
Yeah, but also the parents need guidance as to what to say. And say the same things I said to my kid, like, I love you. I don't know what to do. I don't have an answer for you. You know, that kind of honesty. Instead of like, I'm going to
fix it. Yeah.
But that's all Al-Anon stuff that's addressed there.
Okay, here's a good
to
question.
Say to them.
Yeah,
here's somebody
how to talk
on,
to them.
On 2 milligrams a day of Suboxone. Uh-huh. Thing is, I've been on for 7 years. Okay. It's horrible. Uh-huh. I hate it, okay. But it's better than what I was doing. She was an opiate addict.
Okay.
I guess I have a love-hate relationship. Okay. She's listening. Suboxone, I've come to realize that I might be taking it forever. That's true. She might be taking it forever.
She
if she's functioning
two milligrams.
And okay. I mean, it's not something I'm interested in because it's not a thriving existence for her. It's kind of she's aware
She says she's miserable.
She's not her full self, her full potential, but it's better than what she was doing.
Okay.
She wants to know about kratom and using that. It's like, no, don't do that. Don't do that.
No, I would suggest that as somebody on 2 milligrams, right, should enlist in a 12-step program, get a sponsor, start working the steps, and come off of that.
If possible.
Slowly.
If possible.
Slowly. Come off
well,
of
how
it.
You get two, you're pretty much
cut them.
Yeah,
they
cut them. All right.
Cut them and then take a day off. Cut them, take a day off.
Yes, yes.
And really elongate that out. Have the social support network available all the time. Mm-hmm. And then you may need some other medications like some clonidine.
When you get off it.
When you get off it completely. Clonidine, some gabapentin.
Be aware that you're going to be different when you get off, and you're going to have to really rely on that program you've been establishing.
Exactly. But establish the program first and move into that.
It's good. This may take 6 months to a year.
It absolutely may take 6 months.
Here's how a guy that I know that got off it described it. So you're going along, you were like this.
Yeah, all over the place.
Like this.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've been going along like this for like 3 or 4 years, and you get off of it. Mm-hmm. And it goes like this.
Right, that's right.
And he was actually
Well, describe what, we're on a podcast. What did you just do? You were showing up and
it's
down.
It's an emotional dip. It's a existential angst. It's a what
downturn.
Is life about?
It's kind of depression.
It's anhedonia.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the steps that he had worked on Suboxone weren't working for him.
Not quite.
Down in the dip part. Right. And he started to become disillusioned. I was like, dude, don't. It's not the AA's fault.
Right.
You've gone off a drug. It's a profound drug. We still don't know even all its effects on us.
And it could be a rough year.
And
it
could be a rough year.
It's going to be a rough year.
I said 6 months.
Just accept it.
I said 6 months. Don't say a year.
If I were talking to the patient, I'd say the same thing.
Right. Yeah, 6 months.
And you've already been through two.
Three more months, you're going to be feeling better. Eight-ish.
All right, Ms. Producer, are we okay here to wrap it up? Okay, our Facebook Live, guys. So that will be a sign unto us.
Okay.
Thank you to Shelly. Thanks to our friends at Bergamet and Hydrolite. Give your program.
Oh, yeah.
Bel Air Treatment.
Bel Air Treatment.
Do you have a website
Bel Air
or anything?
Bel Air Valley Detox. What's our website, Bel Air?
Bel Air?
Do you have a personal Twitter or something that people can follow you and tweet you and stuff?
No, I don't.
Nothing like that.
No, but here's the deal. If you want to get off drugs and you want to find Shelly, go to Sepulveda and Sunset and then drive up north towards
to
Getty
Moraga.
And look for all the cigarette smoke. You'll find her.
Hopefully.
Well, they're
80
clients.
All right, thanks.
She has 80 clients.
I know. I've been there. They're on the other side.
Crazy.
They're on the other side from the,
freeway.
Getty. Yeah, they're opposite side from the Getty.
But Sepulveda's on that side.
Oh, I see.
All right. Well, thank you for having me.
Great to have you as always.
I get to come back. Thank you so much.
You're going to have your own show.
I'm so excited about all of these new things that we could talk about.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. And I feel like people are coming to podcast for more elaboration of the truth.
Yeah, what we're experiencing
in life. I don't mean just our podcast. I've noticed lots of people are because media doesn't provide any information anymore. The educational system is sort of flawed. People are hungry for real info, and they're coming to podcasts for sort of long form conversation exploration of things, you know,
right.
by people that know what they're
That's
talking about.
That's why Shelly needs one. So all of you at Facebook Live, all of you that listening, email Susan that she has to have a Shelly podcast on the Drew Network.
All right.
Done.
All right. We'll see you next time.
All right. Good night.
Bye.
There you go.
Bye.
Well, we're so pleased to have Hydrolite back. Hydrolite is something that we and my family use just about every day, and it is simply the best oral rehydration product I have ever seen. And there are many reasons you should keep some around. I got the flu. I relied on Hydrolite because I knew it would rehydrate me the way an IV fluid would. We all have heard about the flus and the diarrheas, and they all knock you out. Staying well hydrated is critical to getting over these conditions. Even if you manage to avoid getting infected, your schedule is half as busy as mine. Getting 8 glasses of water a day isn't likely to happen. And you don't need it if you've got the proper hydration product, Hydrolite. That is the beauty. Whether you're sick or not, you can absolutely benefit from proper balance of sodium, glucose, and water. Hydrolyte does this better than a sports drink or water alone. That's right, better. And it comes in great flavors like orange, berry, lemonade. It's available in a pre-mixed powder. My personal preference, little effervescent tablets. You can simply drop in a bottle of water or a glass of water, and you're done. You got it, and you are rehydrated. And compared to sports drinks, Hydrolyte delivers up to 4 times the electrolytes with 75% less sugar. I know. Don't buy into the hype of the brands. Use Hydrolyte. It's a better product. I'm telling you, I had intended to invent it. They got there first, so I'm all behind them. Hydrolyte solutions are appropriate for all ages, and each bottle or package includes easy-to-follow dosing instructions. Order Hydrolyte today at Hydrolyte.com/DRDREW. That is Hydrolyte.com/Dr. Drew. And for a limited time, our listeners can save 30% on Hydrolyte. We actually buy in bulk in our family, so we're going to click through. Believe me, just click the banner on my site and use the code DRDREW18. That is DRDREW18.
Remember, you can find all these podcasts at drdrew.com. The Dr. Drew podcast, the This Life podcast, and the Adam and Drew podcast, which is available 5 days a week. Find them all on iTunes and rate us 5 stars. Subscribe and get it first. And if you're really happy, click on the Amazon banner at drdrew.com to help support the show. We'll thank you for it. If you join the email list via drdrew.com/contact, we'll send you a weekly infusion newsletter with Dr. Drew's news. We're so grateful when you get in touch. We read all your emails and we'll bring you the subject matter you want to hear about.
You live.